Picture this. You were set up on a 4-mile final. Stable. On speed. The airplane is doing exactly what you asked it to do, and maybe you're feeling pretty good about how this approach is going. Then the left wing goes somewhere you did not send it. 15 degrees of uncommanded bank. Maybe 20. You did not do that. You did not ask for it. The airplane just moved on its own for a second and a half that felt like 10. That is a wake turbulence encounter. Pilots who have been through one describe that first moment as a surprise unlike almost anything else in aviation. The airplane simply goes somewhere else. And if you have never experienced that and you're still building hours, I want today's tip to land with some weight, because this is a hazard that has ended flights for pilots who got 100% on the wake turbulence question on their written exam. I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar, and we are talking about wake turbulence today. Not because it is exotic or complicated, but because it is invisible. It behaves in ways that are not instinctive, and it is entirely preventable if you understand it before you are inside it. Before we get into the physics, a quick word about AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the aviation journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, commercial. There is a coin for each of those moments. A real physical thing you can hold that marks a milestone that actually meant something. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's talk about where wake turbulence actually comes from. It is not weather. It has nothing to do with thermals or atmospheric instability. Wake turbulence is a direct and unavoidable consequence of how wings generate lift. When a wing produces lift, it creates a pressure differential. High pressure on the bottom surface, low pressure on the top. At the wingtip, where there is nothing left of the wing to maintain that separation, the high pressure air underneath spills up and over the edge, trying to reach the low pressure region above. That rolling motion creates a vortex, a spinning column of air that trails behind each wingtip as the aircraft moves through the sky. Every lifting wing generates two of these. One from each wingtip. They counter-rotate. The left vortex spins clockwise when viewed from behind. The right vortex spins counterclockwise. Both rotate inward at the top and outward at the bottom. That geometry matters. If you fly through one from below, one side of your aircraft experiences upwash and the other experiences downwash. The result is a rapid, uncommanded roll toward the downwash side. That is the upset. Now let's talk about intensity. The strength of those vortices is directly tied to how much lift the wing is generating. Heavier aircraft produce stronger vortices because their wings are working harder. But angle of attack matters just as much as weight. When an aircraft is slow, heavy, and at a high angle of attack, the vortices it generates are at their absolute peak. Think about when those three conditions exist together. Takeoff, rotation, short final. The most critical low-altitude, high-workload phases of any flight, and those are exactly the moments when you are most likely to be in the same part of the sky as another aircraft. A Boeing 737 on a slow approach to landing generates significantly more powerful wake than the same airplane cruising at 35,000 feet. A Boeing 747 or a Boeing 767 on final is generating vortices that have been documented in actual accident reports to roll light aircraft completely inverted without warning. That is not a hypothetical worst case. It has happened to real pilots on unremarkable afternoons. When you hear air traffic control transmit a call sign that includes the word heavy, that is a mandatory regulatory requirement. Any aircraft with a maximum certificated takeoff weight above 300,000 pounds must include heavy in its radio call sign. You hear Delta 460 heavy cleared to land, and you're hearing about a vortex generating machine that just used the runway you might be approaching. That word is there so you can plan accordingly. So once those vortices form, where do they go? They sink. That is the most important physical behavior to understand. After they form behind the wingtips, they descend at roughly 300 to 500 feet per minute. They tend to level off somewhere between 500 and 900 feet below the generating aircraft's flight path, and then they slowly decay. The decay takes longer than almost anyone expects the first time they actually think about it. In calm conditions, wake turbulence can persist for 2 to 3 minutes after the generating aircraft has passed. 2 minutes sounds like nothing, but think about how far you travel on a 4-mile final at 80 knots in 2 minutes. The aircraft that created that vortex may be turning off the runway before the hazard it left behind is gone. Wind is the second variable, and this is where it gets counterintuitive. Most pilots assume that any wind at all would help clear wake turbulence away from the runway. A direct headwind or tailwind can accelerate vortex decay, but a crosswind, specifically a light crosswind of 5 to 10 knots, does something different. It takes one vortex and moves it off the runway, and it holds the other one essentially over the center line. Picture a right crosswind. The upwind vortex drifts to the right off the runway surface. That one is moving away. But the downwind vortex, trailing from the left wingtip, drifts to the left, or holds nearly in place, depending on the geometry. It can sit right on the extended center line at exactly the altitude that matters on approach. A light crosswind does not make the situation safer. In certain configurations, it concentrates the hazard in the worst possible location. This is something students sometimes never fully picture, because it requires a three-dimensional mental model of an object you cannot see. Take a moment the next time you're on the ground and actually visualize it. The aircraft ahead of you on final, two vortices trailing behind each wingtip, sinking away from the flight path, drifting with whatever crosswind exists at that altitude. That picture has to be present in your thinking every time you're following another aircraft, especially a larger one. Now, the Federal Aviation Administration has established wake turbulence separation standards. Super heavy aircraft, like the Airbus A380, require 6 miles of separation for following traffic. Heavy jets require 4 miles in most configurations. Large aircraft, which includes many turboprop commuters, require 3 miles for smaller successors. Those standards give controllers a framework to work from. But there is a critical limitation that every pilot operating under visual flight rules, or VFR, needs to understand clearly. Those separation minimums primarily govern instrument flight rules, or IFR, traffic being sequenced by air traffic control, or ATC, on instrument approaches. When you are operating visually at a towered airport and the controller says, "Caution, wake turbulence, a heavy just departed," that is an advisory. It is the controller doing their job. It is not a guarantee that you are safely separated from the hazard. Controllers cannot see wake turbulence. They cannot tell you that the crosswind at 500 feet moved one vortex directly over your center line. They cannot account for the difference between what the surface wind is reporting and what the wind is doing at pattern altitude. The caution wake turbulence call is where your awareness begins. It is not where your responsibility ends. And at uncontrolled airports, you carry all of that responsibility without any advisory at all. If you are landing at a non-towered field behind a departing turboprop, the entire job of modeling where those vortices went belongs to you. If you are ever uncomfortable with your spacing, ask for more time. The words are simple. Tell the tower you want to hold short for wake turbulence or that you would like additional time before your departure. Controllers hear this. It is the right call. No examiner, no controller, and no fellow pilot worth their certificate will think less of you for it. 30 extra seconds or 2 additional minutes of spacing is worth more than any schedule you might be keeping. Let's walk through the specific scenarios where you need a plan already in place. Departing behind a large or heavy aircraft. Your goal is to rotate before the heavy's rotation point and climb above their flight path. The vortices begin forming at the moment of rotation. They trail behind and they sink. If you lift off at the same point and follow the same climb profile, you are entering the corridor where those vortices are descending toward you. Rotating earlier on the available runway keeps you ahead of the strongest vortex concentration near the surface. Climbing above the heavy's departure path keeps you in clean air above the sinking wake. If you cannot achieve those two things given the runway available, request more time. Extended departure intervals exist for this exact reason. Landing behind a large or heavy aircraft works differently. The wake from a landing aircraft begins at the touchdown point, not at the threshold. The approach corridor from the threshold back to wherever the heavy's wheels actually contacted the runway contains the vortices from the entire final approach. Once the heavy rolls out on the surface, those approach vortices are beginning to dissipate, but they have not disappeared. Your goals on landing are to fly a slightly higher final approach path than the aircraft ahead and aim to touch down beyond their actual touchdown point. Higher on final keeps you above their wake on the descent. Landing farther down the runway puts your wheels on a section of pavement past the heaviest vortex concentration from the approach path. 2 minutes in calm conditions is a reasonable personal minimum before using a runway a heavy just vacated. That is not a regulatory number for visual operations, but it aligns with what wake turbulence research shows about vortex decay under light wind conditions. In calm conditions, you want that buffer. Parallel runways. This is one that pilots sometimes overlook. The vortices from an aircraft on the adjacent runway do not know where the boundary line is. They drift with the wind. If a heavy is operating on the parallel runway to your left and the surface wind is blowing from left to right, those vortices can migrate into your airspace at traffic pattern altitude. Know the wind. Think about where the wake is actually going, not just where it was generated. Helicopter wake turbulence is worth mentioning separately. Rotorcraft generate a different and more complex vortex structure than fixed-wing aircraft, and it is less predictable in behavior. The general guidance is to avoid operating behind and below a hovering or slow-moving helicopter. Less common for most student pilots, but worth keeping in the mental file. Here is the thing I want you to hold on to above everything else in this segment. You cannot see wake turbulence. There is no visual cue in clear air, no shimmer, no distortion, no warning. The only protection you have is understanding the physics, tracking the aircraft that generated the wake, accounting for time and wind, and putting yourself somewhere else before it matters. Recovery techniques exist. The standard guidance during a vortex-induced upset is to apply full aileron into the bank and avoid an aggressive pull. Pulling hard into a vortex-induced roll can worsen the situation before it helps. But those techniques are for situations where avoidance has already failed. At low altitude on approach or departure, you may not have the altitude margin to execute them successfully. Prevention is the strategy that actually works every time. The Airman Certification Standards address wake turbulence in the aeronautical knowledge areas. Your oral examiner will likely ask you about it in the context of a specific scenario. You are cleared to depart behind a regional jet that just rotated. What do you do? Have a procedural answer ready? Know where the vortices are, what the wind is doing, and what you are going to do about it. Deliver it with confidence. That kind of deliberate, pre-planned thinking is exactly what the oral examination is designed to find. The Aeronautical Information Manual, Chapter 7, Section 3, has the full Federal Aviation Administration guidance on wake turbulence. The diagrams in that section illustrate the crosswind vortex geometry in a way that text alone cannot fully convey. If you have not read that section in full, the actual AIM AN, not just a study guide summary, set aside 15 minutes for it. It will change how you visualize the problem in three dimensions. Before your next flight at a busy airport, add one step to your pre-departure thinking. Ask yourself what has been operating ahead of you, what the wind is doing, and where the wake is going to be. Build that picture before you need it, not while you're already on final wondering what just happened. The AIM is your primary source, and RadioHangar.com has show notes with links to the FAA resources on this one. See you next time on Traffic Pattern.